Okay, Rabbosai, so we're learning now Sanhedrin Daf Chaf Hei Omid Beis.
Sorry,
Rabbi. Yeah. Does it say anything about Chumash today? No.
No.
Again, I'm open to suggestion, but you have to notify me.
Okay.
So let's open up the Gemara.
I just want to say hello to you quickly. David Green.
Nice to see you.
Sweden adores you.
Thank you. From Atlanta?
Yes.
Wow. Okay,
yes.
Great. Send my love. If he would adore me, he would have told you to come to my shir. If he would. Okay, Chaf Hei Amud Beis. And we're talking about Hazara. So we're talking about Psulei Eidus Derabanan. And the Mishnah had listed a whole bunch of Psulei Eidus. And now the Braisa tells us at what point we can reinstate these Psulim. They have to undergo a public and absolutely extreme method of tshuva in order to be reinstated. So for example, in the case of Masachik Bekubia, it's not enough that they destroy all those chips that we spoke about, and it's not enough that they desist from gambling and making money. They can't even play games for free. In the case of Malva Beribis, not only do they have to desist from lending or borrowing with usury, with interest, they also have to abstain from charging a guy ribis. And this goes on and on. It's always to take it to the other extreme. So for example, if you take a look at this paragraph, which is on page Lamed Aleph, on the left column, he says that in the case of a Masachik Bekuvia, he's not allowed to play these games even for free. And so too in the case of a guy, he shouldn't lend money to a guy with usury. Rashi uses the phrase, Sheishtakach Shem Ribis Mipihem. Rashi says that the word ribis should be so foreign to their mouths, they no longer enunciate the word ribis, and therefore they'll never come to be makalkel themselves again by taking ribis, because the word ribis is totally foreign. It's out of their vocabulary. And the Rambam writes something similar in Hilchos Tshuva Perek Beis. The Rambam writes that the ultimate tshuva gemura, is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu could testify about this person that he'll never return to repeat the sin. And in order to achieve that level, that he will never reinstate or re-violate that sin, he'll never fall prey to the same Yetzirah, he's got to go to an extreme. Because there's always that same ambiance, or that's those same temptations that will tempt him. So he's got to get to the point where the Yodea Talumos, the Almighty in heaven, will be able to testify about him that he won't repeat the sin. That's called Tshuva Gemura. That's the ultimate level of Tshuva. So when the Gemara says that with regard to Chazor, to reinstate someone who was excluded, he was disqualified from Eidus, he needs to go to the other extreme. Afilu bechinam lo avde, lenachri lo mozif. He doesn't gamble even for fun. He doesn't play the same games for fun. He doesn't lend goyim with yiribis. He needs to do a tshuva gemura, a complete tshuva, in order to guarantee us that he won't fall prey to the same yetzahar. The Meshech Chachma in Parshas Vayelech, based on a Rambam in Shmona Prakim, says that a chole yisrape b'dvarim marim hepech tivo. Now, normally a person likes to eat sweet things, but in order to undergo a process of healing, he needs to go to the other extreme, and that means that he has to eat something that's sour, that's bitter. And ultimately, he swings, by swinging from one extreme to the other, he ultimately ends up in the middle, which is called the memutza, otherwise known as the golden mean, because he no longer has a tendency for these very sweet things, he now is normal. And he will eat that which is healthy. And Yushalmi in Masechta Sanhedrin says that David was Makashet Lepilagsha B'chol Yom V'omer Liyitzro Hine Tavas Dover Osir L'chayech. Now it seems that David HaMelech, in a certain sense, was tempting himself. He would have his pilagshim dress up on a regular basis. And yet he was able to look the Yetzer Hara in the eye, and he would say, you know what? I don't have a taiva for you, even though it's a davar mutar technically, but I'm not overwhelmed by this taiva. So the obvious question here, the Meshech Chachma, is it seems from the Yushalmi that David HaMelech was absolutely exposing himself in an active way to the temptation of the Yetzer Hara of a taiva. And the answer perhaps is that even had he given in to his taiva, he still would have been within the letter of the law. He would not be violating the law. It would be a davar muta. So why would David HaMelech present himself expose himself to this situation? Why would he deliberately surround himself with this taiva, with this desire? And the answer is because David wanted to put himself into that situation of tshuva gemura. And tshuva gemura requires that you go to the other extreme, like the Meshech Chachma says about the chola, that he should eat dvarim hamarim, the other extreme. So that now David HaMelech had fallen prey to his yetzer hara, to his taiva, on one particular occasion. And now he wants to expose himself to that taiva again, because, you know, pilagshav miskashtos, and he wants to overcome that taiva. So by going to the other extreme, he can now kill himself and destroy that taiva. And then it'll end up right in the middle. But by destroying that taiva, the Odea Talumos would be able to testify about him that he would never fall prey to that yetzer hara. So therefore, in the case of Masachik B'Kubya, it's not enough that he desists from gambling, or in the case of Malv B'Ribis, that he desists from charging interest, but he has to go to the other extreme. And even a Dover Mutter, he's going to avoid. Like David HaMelech is going to avoid the Dover Mutter of having these ongoing, you know, escapades with his Pilagshim, which again is a Dover Mutter. But that's the way you train yourself, that you won't be tempted, that you've actually, so to speak, killed the Yetzer Hara. Now let's talk about Sochrei Shviyos on the same daf, Chav Hei Amud Beis, in the same Braisa. What is Chazara for Sochrei Shviyos? So first of all, they have to undergo or experience a second shvius, the bodlu, and they don't do any merchandise, any sale of peros shvius. They're mafke their peros, so that anybody can come and take their fruits. Rabbi Nechemia adds that's not enough for chazara of sochrei shvius, ela chazaras mamon. They have to go ahead and reimburse those who bought the perishvias to make it into a sale of, instead of a sale, make it into hefker. I didn't make any money and earn anything by selling you perishvias. Here's your money back and keep the shvias. Ketzad? Omar ani ploni bar ploni. I identify so and so. Ki nasti masayim zuz beperishvias. I sold on the market my fruits of shvias, and as a result, I have an asset of 200 zuz. That's an awesome sum of money. Harehem nisunim b'matono la'aniyim. I now declare that these masayim zuz should be given to the charity the chest, the community chest, as staka, such that I benefit not even a grush from the Masayim Zuz that I enjoyed the benefit of as Peros Shvis. This is also, in a sense, going to another extreme and demonstrating that you would be willing to give up 200 zuz in order to do tshuva for the 200 zuz that you enjoyed and you benefited from as an asset by selling peros shvis. On the bottom of Lamed Aleph, going on to the top of Lamed Beis, if, let's say, he was involved in merchandise in selling Peros Shvias for part of the Shvias year, but midway through the Shvias year he did tshuva and he stopped his misbehaving. Would that enough be Chazor B'Shvias? He suggests the following. He says the Imsochar Peros Shvias B'Miktas Shnas HaShvias V'Oso Shvias Bisofa Bodel is Gamke Mahani, that would be enough as a Chazor, even though part of that very same year he violated Shvias by selling Peros Shvias, but nevertheless he can use the balance of the year as a Chazor. It's like month connected month, you follow what I mean? You know, he's got a time period that corresponds to the time period that he violated this prohibition, that he desists. However, when does he need an entire year to replace this year? Meaning he has to wait 7 years till the next cycle of Shvias. That's only the Ofen Shesachar Kol Shana Shnas HaShvias. He was involved in selling Peros Shvias for the entire year. He cannot replace it and do tshuva unless he experiences an entire year of Shvias, which will happen 7 years down the line. Again, this is all based on the Rambam that we spoke about, that tshuva gemura requires that a person find himself with the same situation that he had when he did the aver. So he did an aver of 365 days. In order to achieve a chazara in Eidus, he needs tshuva gemura, which means he's got to do 365 days of abstaining from this avera. And that he can only do after, number one, he has charata, and he has a full azivas achet. He finds himself 365 days in the next Shemitah in which he desists from selling and making his peros shvias into merchandise. V'nira d'b'chol hanach shelo chazach hazor gemura eno posel dak misofekim shevadai posel d'mukminilei acheskas rosha. In other words, in Hilchas Eidus, we have Allah that until he does Tshuva Gemura, he still retains his status as a Rasha. Again, I wouldn't have gone this far to use the word Rasha here. I would have used the word Psul. You remember that we spoke about the fact that there's something called Kiyum Adover and Bir Adover. And Bir Adover, I think he may have already convinced us that he's no longer Rasha. But as far as Kiyum Adover is concerned, he has to do what's called Tshuva Gemura. And Tshuva Gemura requires a fulfillment of certain regulations and certain conditions until he has done the kiyum of chazar and undermined the status of a psul eidus. Now Rashi adds a few important words over here. Rashi says that what happens in the next shvius, the second shvius in which he does tshuva, Shelo yisu v'yitnu b'peroseim v'yafkiru ginoseim la'anim. Look at the word v'yafkiru. Please underline that word. Rashi says that shvias, to observe shvias properly, it's not just enough that you desist from merchandise with shvias, you're not selling it, but you have to go one step further. You have to be mafkir, not only the peros shvias, but the ginoseim. Ginoseim means the orchards where the fruits are growing have to be absolutely open. You can't lock them.
But is that the case anyways in the Shvias You make everything hefker.
Right, so but not only that, you have to make sure that the hefker is accessible, you know, because what would it mean if you were mafkir your peros, but you locked the doors? And it would be trespassing for someone to, you know, to jump or to vault over the over your door. The answer is you have to be mafkir not only the peros but also the ginos. Make sure that the ginos, the orchards, are absolutely open. That's your fulfillment of the mitzvah of shvius. Now, one of the super commentaries on Kodshim and Zroim is the Migdash David, who lived about, I would say, maybe two centuries ago, even less. And he writes, based on this Rashi, that Shvius requires that you mafkir for everyone. And Afal Gav, even though Perish Shvius are Hefka Lakol, Mikolakom Loayim Melaktim Rak Anim. He says that there are two dinim in Shvius. One din is who's actually going to enjoy the Perish Shvius and pick them up and take them home. And there's another din of the Hefka itself. From the perspective of the Hefker itself, Rashi is indicating the Afkiru, that he has to be Mafkir. But from the perspective of who's going to actually come into his field and take and collect these Perishvias, the answer is the Aniyim, the poor people. So technically, it's Hefker Lakol, but the Malaktim, those who actually exercise their rights to come into the field and collect the fruits and take them home, those are the Aniyim. So now we're getting into a little bit, a taste of the laws of Kedushas Perish Shvius. The Sukkah, in the Sukkah Lamentes Amid Beis, there's something called Lokeach Min HaShomur. Shomur means that instead of opening his fields to anybody to come in during the Shvius year, he Shomur. Shomur means he locked the doors, he locked the fences, no one could get in. And Rashi says, "Sodezu haisa b'shumeres begader zeh," with this fence, it was protected. No one could get access to the fruits. And nechshad le'inyan she'eno mafkil aniyim. If he's not letting aniyim in, but rather he's locking it, it would seem that he wasn't mafkir really for the aniyim. In other words, any formal declaration that he made was just words; they were not sincere. He didn't, you know, how should I say, come through the clutch and follow through by opening his field. So that's not really being mafkir to the aniyim. And the Torah says, "V'ochlu evyone amcha," that the poor people amongst you will be able to eat. Hainu zed de mafkir aniyim. Who fulfills the mitzvah of shvius when he's mafkir for the aniyim? And then he's included on the V'ochlu Evyone Amecha. Now it's very interesting, because in the case of Mishumar, of Shomur, Rashi puts the emphasis on the fact that he wasn't Mafkir Le'aniyim. Right, until now we've been assuming in the Migdash David that being Mafkir for Aniyim is not really enough, it's not sufficient to clinch the mitzvah. You need to be Mafkir Lakol, for everyone. And the one who notices this is the Rashash, and he says, "I don't get it. What does Rashi mean by mafkil aniyim? Shmita havi hefkel akol." He has to open up his fields for everyone and declare that everything is hefker. I don't know if he has to declare it. It could be that if he opens up his field, that's enough. That's called afkata demalka, that the Torah itself makes it hefker. But Rashi seems to assume in the Sechta Sukkah that all he needs is to be mafkil aniyim. Now, if Rashi holds that all he needs to be mafkil aniyim, then the Rashash concludes that the Ashir will not have any rights to come into his field to take the peros, because that would be gzela. Because you can be mafkir your fruits for somebody, for one group of designated people, and not for other people. Anyone who doesn't belong to the membership of that club, it's considered gezel if he takes it. And that's the final conclusion of the Rashash, that within the framework of Peros Shvius, the Hefker is such, according to Rashi, that the Ashirim will not be able to take from the Peros Shmias. Udvarav Tmuim, the Peros Shmias have Yehefke L'Kuli Alma. And the words of Rashi, if they're being interpreted correctly by the Rosh Hashanah, are very, very tamua, because we know that Shmias is Hefke L'Kol. In fact, there's a Mishnah that describes a person who says, Eidi Mafkir, Achi Yafkir Aflashir. The Mishnah says that it's not considered Hefker until he's Mafkir Kashirim. Right, this is a machlokas between Beis Silvei Chamai as to whether or not, yet, in order to be Mafkir, you could be Mafkir only for a select group of people, or does Hefker require that you're Mafkir for the entire world? That's a machlokas Tanoim. And Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, are of the opinion that it's not that Hefker requires that be Mafkir for everyone, and he adds the word Kishmita. In other words, the source for Beit Hillel's halacha that Hefker requires that it's got to be absolutely Hefker for everyone is Shmita. That's his paradigm. So you see clearly that Shmita requires that you be Mafkir for everyone. And yet Rashi says that the case of Shomer is guilty because Eino Mafkir L'Aniyim, as if to say, as the Rosh Hashanah Vedayik, that had he been Mafkir his Peros Shvius V'Aniyim, that would have been sufficient. That's the Rosh Hashanah's conclusion based on Rashi. That's a Dover Tema. Peros Shvius require Hefker L'Kol.
But this Rashi is only when he's trying to be reinstated, or this is...
No, Rashi's talking about a case of a lokeach min hashomer. I buy fruits from you during Shemitah. What did you do with your fruits during Shemitah? Instead of being mafker them, you were shomer them. You didn't allow anyone to eat, and then you ultimately sold it to me. In that context, Rashi says that the shomer was guilty of non-fulfillment of his responsibility, his obligation of Shemitah, because eino mafker l'aniyim. You know, it's interesting, if you go back to our Rashi here in Sanhedrin, also in Sanhedrin, when he talks about chazorah for those who are selling shvius, he says, Shelo yisu v'yitnu b'peros sehem. V'yafkiru, what's he going to do for chazorah the next Shemitah round? V'yafkiru ginoseim le'anim. Let me just make sure that I'm not making a mistake over here. Where is the Rashi? Just 1 second. Am I on the right page here? Let me just see. Yeah, Chafei Amid Beis. Where is it? Oh, now of course I'm not finding it. Let's see. Yeah, where is it? Toward the top of Chafei Amid Beis?
Yeah. Next to the Gideon Shas.
Okay, just 1 second. The Badlu Shalo Yisu V'yitnu V'peresem V'yafkiru Ginosem La'niyim. So this tema that he's asking would seem, in my humble opinion, to be an objection to two different Rashis, not just Rashi in Sukkah on Lamed Tes, but also Rashi here on Chaf Hei in Sanhedrin. Now, if you know the Beis Yosef, Hanan, you wanted to make a comment before. Yeah, the Beis Yosef authored amongst his many, many books a tshuva sefer called Avkas Rochel. And he writes that Yesh Mitzvah Karkafta de Gavra LaHafkir Peros Shvius. As I said before, this is one of the main issues in Shvius. Do you actually have to declare your Peros Hefker, or it's an Afkata de Malka? Afkata de Malka means that the Torah itself is Mafkir, your Peros Shvius. You don't have to do that. But the Afkas Rochel is reflecting the Shita that not a Karkafta de Malka, but rather a Karkafta de Gavra, that every single farmer has to be mafkir's peros, and he has to declare, Hareze Hefker, my peros are Hefker. There's not an automatic state of Hefker that is generated by the Torah itself, by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Melech Malchei HaMelachim. Aval eino mafkir, eino mufkar. If he didn't fulfill his obligation to be mafkirit, then Enoch Hinami retains his ownership. No one's allowed to take his fruits. And even though he violates the essay of li'achlo, which means give it to the aniyim to eat by being mafkir it. But nevertheless, eino hefker v'ein acher ashoy litlo. Now, one of the contemporaries, a little bit before the Beis Yosef, was the Marit. His name was Tirani, if you ever heard of him, the very, very famous Italian family of giants in Torah. And he quotes a sugya in Nidorim, Tafmen Beis, the Shvias HaVyafkata de Malka. Not Afkata, Karkafta de Gavra. It's not that you have to be mafkir, but the Torah itself is mafkir. The Melech Malchi Amlochim is mafkir. And therefore, Afal Pi Sheyachzik Bohem, even if the owner of the field, you know, holds on to, he's tofe, he doesn't allow anyone to have access to his peiros, v'lo yafkiem, it doesn't matter. The Baal Bayis can do whatever he wants, he can stand on his head from now until Mashiach comes, but mufkarim v'yomdim him. He has no bailus. The Torah itself was mafkia his bailus. That's the sheet of the Marit. According to Beis Yosef, he's obligated to be mafkir, and if he doesn't do so, then no one's allowed to take his peiros. Now the Minchas Chinuch in Mitzvah Pei Dalet, that's a Mitzvah of Shvius, explains that even though it's Hefker Mimela, now I'm not sure when he says Hefker Mimela, is he accepting the Marit, hook, line, and sinker? I don't know. He's certainly accepting the Marit that it's not necessary for the Baal Bayis to be mafkir, but would we possibly make an integration in between the Marit and the Beis Yosef and accept one point of the Beis Yosef, and that is that there's a mitzvah saseh that he allows others to take his fruits. So again, it could be that even if we accept the Marit, that automatically, regardless of the Baal Bayis and whether he decides to comply with the law and be mafkir, his peiros shvius are hefker memela. But nevertheless, on top of that, there's a mitzvah saseh sheyinog bahen minig hefker. In other words, they shall allow people into his field and take the fruit. So that could be an overlap between the Marit and the Beis Yosef, that will take one premise and one principle from the Marit, another principle will take from the Beis Yosef, and will integrate it. That on the one hand, Hefker is Chal, whether he likes it or not. The Torah shoves Hefker down his throat. On the other hand, the Torah expects him, the essay, to follow through with Hefker and allow access to anyone who wants to come in and take his peiros. If he doesn't do so, and he rather protects and fences around this field, locking up the fruits, he violates this essay, but his peiros are hefker anyway. Why? Because afkata de malka. Let's take a look at the Rambam's language in Perek Dal Milchas Shmita. Mitzvah saseh lahashmit b'shmiyas kol ma shetotzi ha'aretz. What does that sound like? Is it automatic, or is it a positive command? Right, mitzvah saseh lahashmit sounds like he's got to be mashmit. Mashmit means to make it hefker. Kol mashit totzi aretz shenever avshvius tishmetena unitashta. The tashta means that you, as the owner of this field, have to leave the field open for the aniyim. Kol anoel karmo, anyone who locks up his field, bitel mitzvah saseh. And the same thing applies in Asaf Kol Peirosov L'Sof Beiso. He has two options to violate this essay. Either he locks up his field, or he gathers together all the fruits and he holds them, hoards them for himself. V'nira, says the Gvurus Yitzchak, the Sfir Leila Rashi, the Afagav, the Ikar Torah's Hefker, the Shvius, Me'afkata, the Malka, who Bein La'anim, who Bein La'ashir, Mikol Mekom HaMitzah Seishi Yinog Mehen, Minog Hefker, Shol Yimna Chere, Milito Huchak Klapei Ha'anim, L'chud. Ukeksiv V'ashvies Tishmetenu Natashta V'ochlu Evyone Amecha. Wow. This is what you call a brisket Tzvei Dinen. He's suggesting that Rashi accepted the Shita of the Marit, which is called Afkata de Malka, and that means that automatically, whether he likes it or not, his peros are hefker. But he also accepted one element of the Beis Yosef, as we said earlier, that there's a mitzvah saseh to allow the people to take the fruits. Notice that hefker is not just something that's a legal entity, but it's also a reality of, you know, ala basheta, meaning that it's not just a theoretical hefker, but people are allowed to take it in. So when Rashi says that the obligation he has to be mafkil aniyim, and we were up in arms, how could Rashi say laniyim and the Rashash is kasha? We know that Shemitah is hefker lakol, and we're going to derive the laws of hefker from the paradigmic case of Shviyah. So Shviyah must be hefker lakol. How could Rashi therefore say that he has to be mafkil aniyim? And the answer is that Shemitah is hefker lakol because of Afkata de Malka. That's automatic. And that's not dependent upon whether he likes it or he doesn't like it. But now there's a mitzvah saseh for him to invite those who want to, you know, access, who want to take advantage and exploit the possibility of taking from these pairs of hefker. He's got to allow that to happen. To whom does, vis-a-vis whom does he have to allow access to his peros? Only to the aniyim. Now, the nafkamina would be, is let's say, in an area, again, I don't know how to work this out, it's pretty hypothetical, but let's say in an area where there are ashirim, let's say he lives amongst, you know, all the farmers in the area are ashirim, and he builds a fence around his property, and basically, in effect, he prevents the aniyim from getting access to his peros. Would he be in violation of this essay? For sure not, right? Because Rashi holds the essay is to be mafki to whom? To the aniyim, to allow access to the aniyim. If right now he's only holding back, you know, we're looking for a metzias where he's preventing the ashirim from coming into his field, but he's allowing aniyim to come in. You know, maybe he puts a shomer and the shomer checks your tax return. I don't know exactly. He says mishum hachi, Rashi kshavol farsh chazoras sochrei shvius. If you want to do tshuva because in the past you were doing business with peros shvius, so you want to reinstate yourself as a kosher a through chazora. Rashi says he has to be mafkir is ginos le'aniyim. Why does Rashi say le'aniyim? Because he violated his mitzvah to be mafkir, his peros laniyim. As far as ashirim are concerned, Rashi doesn't mention a word about ashirim, because it's it already is hefker to the ashirim. That's automatic. But as far as his violation of the essay by selling these peros on the open market, he violated his obligation to be mafkir laniyim, because according to Rashi, the fulfillment of the mitzvah that's incumbent upon the owner of the field vis-a-vis his peros shvius is to be mafkir to the aniyim. As long as he does tshuva and he does a chazara being mafkir aniyim, that's all that's necessary. Sheikayim mitzvah saseh linog ben minag hefkel aniyim shelo yitlem liatzman. He will not prevent the aniyim from taking the fruits. If that be the case, now we can shed a light on Rashi and Sukkah. Rashi in Sukkah says that this fellow who is guilty of shamur, of watching his field and guarding it during Shvius, is choshed in eno mafkil aniyim, Rashi says, that he doesn't allow aniyim access to his fruits. And you might ask a question, well, let's assume that Rashi holds, as we said before, like the Marit, that it's afkata de Malka. So what does it mean, eno mafkil aniyim? What does Rashi mean that he's choshed to not being mafkil aniyim? It's hefker, whether he likes it or not. The answer is, mikol makom, a mitzvah say, as a command, to be meiniach laniyim, to allow the aniyim litol, and not to prevent and block the aniyim from coming in and having access to his fruits. Ani ploni bar ploni kinasti masayim zuz b'per shvius harayim nesunim v'matono laniyim. How does he do tshuva? He violated the Easter of Schorah b'per shvius to the tune of an income of 200 zuz. Now he gives it to tzedakah. Yesh lomar. Let's go back to the Rashi in Sukkah once again. The Torah says that we don't give. I'm sorry. The Torah says that you're allowed to eat the Peir Shvias, give it to the Aniyim, but you're not allowed to do Tzchar with it, with Peir Shvias. Now, the Rabbanan said, a Mosrin Dmei Peir Shvias Lama Oretz. There's something called Dmei Peros Shvias, which means if you sold Peros Shvias and you received Domim, that money, the Domim themselves, are endowed now with a new status. And that status is such that we have to be very careful not to use these Domim. So, Ein Mosrin Dmei Peros Shvias Lama Oretz. Mishum shatora omer li ochla v'lo l'schora shekol per shviyas chayovim lehizbayer b'shviyas. They should be consumed, they should be eaten during the course of shviyas. Hein udmehem, meaning any monies that were accrued by selling per shviyas. V'lo sheyasebem schora latznio li achar shviyas u'lehashir. He's not allowed to get rich by selling per shviyas. It's clear from Rashi that Ameiniach Peros Shvias leha Osher, if he allows the Osher to come in and take his Peros Shvias, Choshev Schora V'Yosser. Rashi goes out of his way to point out that any kind of Schora V'Peros Shvias, which the Osher now is buying his Peros Shvias, that's a violation of this Isur. Says the Gemara Yitzchak, we see from Rashi that the Isur Schora is not the Maisa Schora, it's not the actual act of sale with Perishvis Ki'im, Bazeshem Arviach, but rather it's the profits that accrue to him as a result of the Maisa Mechira, Maisa Schora. Therefore, Aminiach Peros Shvias Li Achar Shvias Leha Oshir Havi Bechlal Isur Schora. Just one second. Aminiach Peros Shvias Li Achar Shvias Leha Oshir Havi Bechlal Isur Schora. Oh, I see. In other words, even though he didn't actually sell it to the Asher, but he held on to it during Shvias in order to give it as a gift to the Asher, that's also called Schora. When you give a gift to someone, you expect quid pro quo, that he'll give you something in return, especially if he's a wealthy guy, and that's considered like Schora v'Peir Shvias. Ulefi zeh, yeishlom edemisha kines masayim zuz. Right, he sold Peros Shvias and he was paid to the tune of Masayim Zuz. V'rviach mi Peros Shvias. So he's making a profit by selling the fruits of Shvias. V'avar be'isus schora tzarech litno b'maton olaniv shelo yarviach mehem. V'yidei zehu metakein ha'isus schora v'chozer me'ha'isur. Now, I'm not sure why he sees this as a chiddush, that's the honest truth. To me, this is a davar pashut. But he's saying that in order to get to the state where he's not making profit on Peros Shvias, then he's got to give a gift to the Aniyim. And that's the tikkun of his Isur Schora. I'm not sure why he feels that he, you know, discovered America here. I don't know. All right, now we're going to start the new sugya. This is the main sugya for today. I think we'll have to wait till tomorrow, but at least an introduction. And that's called Chamsonin. So let's go back to the Gemara. And the Gemara has Hosif Alev. It has a price, more than one price, where the Chachamim expanded at a later period of time after the Mishnah, other psule edus mirabana. And one of them is called Chamsonim. Now, what is a Chamson? So the Gemara spells this out on the bottom of the Amud. Well, not all the way on the bottom. Let's see. Chamsonim Eikar Sovah. Where is that? Approximately maybe 10 lines up from the bottom. Where is it?
Was the sugya starts?
Yeah, the sugya itself.
Fourth wide line.
Fourth of the wide line. Okay. No, are you on Chaf Hei Amid Beis?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fourth of the wide line.
From the down from the wide lines, yeah.
That's a discussion about Roim. No, just one second. Just one second. Where's Chamson?
Well, that's the second. Let's see. This is a
just one second. Oh, there it is. The first of the wide lines. Is that what you said, Hanan?
I said the fourth wide
line. Oh, so look at the first of the wide lines. Chamsonim, Meikara, originally, why did the Rabbanan hesitate and they waited to disqualify the Chamsonim? Savur dechikoyoyev akroy bi'almahu. In other words, that this was a passing phenomenon. They didn't think that these kinds of misbehaviors would become so widespread, it would be such an issue. And why is this so? Because Dami Kayoyev. I'm going to pay money. You know, I'm not just going to force you to cough up the object and walk out with the object and not pay you. I am paying you the value, the market value of the object. That's like Zela. Kevan Dechazu Dechachatfe. At some point in time, these Chamsonim were guilty not just of throwing money into your face and taking your object, but just simply taking your object. That's called Chatfe. I want to read this one more time because I think I'm missing one point. Meikara Savur, the Chamu didn't want to pass the Chamsun Dami Kayyot. Okay, Keva the Chazi the Kachatfi, which I think means that they didn't pay money. One second. Again, Meikara Savur Dami Kayayiv. Oh, I see. I think what he means by Dami Kayoyev is that the Chamson presents the buyer, the seller, with what we remember we use this phrase, an offer that he can't refuse. You know, he offers him a massive amount of money way beyond the market price. And that means that eventually, because of that great offer, the seller agrees to sell. You know, I have an old jalopy car. If you offer me $10,000, I'll sell it to you. You know, I just want to get rid of it. But then came the chaz of the kachatve. Ultimately, what they did was, instead of offering a certain price and enticing the seller to sell it, they would grab the object and just throw the money in their face. Right. That's when the rabbanim got up and they made a new gzera. And Tosfos here, Dibra Masl Meikara, is not happy about this. Yesh la hakshos. I'm going to give you like a little bit of a summary of Tosfos, and that'll be an introduction to tomorrow's Shir Mitzvah. He says, even if he pays, and he doesn't violate lo sigzol, but nevertheless he violates lo sachmod, and that is enough should make him into a rasha. Because lo sachmod means whenever I desire something and I act out on it and get you to sell it to me. So why do we need the Rabbanon to pasal a chamson? A chamson should be pasal d'oraisa because he violated the isur lo sachmod. So Tosfos offers two answers. His first answer is that he doesn't violate lo sachmod unless he denies payment. If he pays for it, he saves himself, spares himself of the avera of lo sachmod. I can't figure out this Tosfos. Anyway, the second answer is a little bit easier for me. The second answer is that they didn't violate lo sachmod because they made such an enticing offer to the seller that eventually he agreed to sell it. And once he agrees to sell it, they're mafayas him to sell it, that alleviates him of the violation of lo sachma.
It seems like in the Gemara, you just throw the money in the space saying, here, take it. And is that waiting for a affirmation or agreement of sale. He's just throwing the money into his face, so to speak, and taking it.
Right, so the question is, in that case, does he violate Lo Sachma? So in Tosus's first answer, he says, that's not Lo Sachma, because he throws the money. Very difficult. Second answer is, that he doesn't throw the money into the face of the seller, but he cajoles him and allures him to agree to sell it. And the very moment that he agrees to sell it, there's no violation of Lo Sachma. Okay, Rabosai, so now we have this discussion here on page Lamed Gimel. I think I gave you also Lamed Dalet, am I right?
Yes.
Yep. What was the first page I gave you? Lamed? Lamed Aleph. Alright, so
Lamed Aleph or Lamed Aleph.
So if the, you know, you can put it into the archives here, which, whatever you like, but if you could please hold on to the second page, which begins on the bottom of Lamed Aleph. So we don't lose that. I'm just going to make a note of where we got up to here, so that we have that.